Happy Tuesday, everyone. I'm Steve Ewell. I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I'm going to be reading you the Arizona Daily Star today for June 9th, 2026. But I thought before we started the Star, we'd go over to have a look at what the National Weather Service has in store for us in the few days to come. High temperatures will be 2 to 7 degrees above normal today and Wednesday, remaining just above normal through the second half of the week. Breezy conditions are expected each afternoon, increasing thunderstorms. Its increasing moisture may start to bring slight chances for showers and thunderstorms by the end of the week through the weekend. Just in time for the opening of the monsoon season on June 15th. So there you have it, folks. That's a summary of the weather for the next few days. Now let's go ahead and cruise over to the Arizona Daily Star for today, the 9th of June, 2026. Here we go. The front page, a triple-digit week. It shows a very large sun set against a set of saguaro cacti. And it says, the late evening sun drops behind a stand of saguaros on a ridge just west of Tucson. And then there's a picture below showing an agave stalk stands against the sunset, lighting up a bank of heavy clouds drifting over Tucson. So, Tucson will be sunny and hot the week before the start of the monsoon season, the forecast shows. A high temperature of 105 degrees is expected both Tuesday and Wednesday, the National Weather Service in Tucson said in its weekly forecast. Thursday, and Friday, here are predicted to reach 103 degrees. Saturday is expected to climb back up to 105 degrees. Moisture moving into the region beginning Thursday will result in a 10% chance of thunderstorms in the Tucson region. However, most of the moisture is expected to stay east of Pima County, the forecast shows. Lows for the week here are expected to be in the mid-70s. Tucson's monsoon season runs from June 15th through September 30th. During last year's monsoon, Tucson saw 2.82 inches of total rainfall. That's just under half the normal Tucson monsoon rainfall from 1991 through 2020, the Weather Service says. So the weather is one of the big front page stories this morning. Let's go to some other ones. Arizona bill aids use of small reactors. Well, much of rural Arizona could soon be dotted with small modular nuclear reactors. Legislation approved by the Senate and awaiting a House vote would strip supervisors in Arizona's 13 rural counties, everywhere but Maricopa and Pima, from being able to use zoning or other land use regulations to prohibit the reactors from being located in certain places. The measure is aimed, at least partly, at allowing these reactors to be placed where there used to be coal-fired power plants without additional review. The idea is that there is already the infrastructure there, mainly a high-voltage power line and power lines to distribute the power generated. But the bigger piece is wrapped up in the debate about data centers. That's because the measure is specifically worded to say that one of those plants can go in right next door, again without county oversight, to a business with a, quote, extra high load energy factor, unquote. That means a lot of 24/7 electricity demand, which pretty much matches the power draw of a data center. The measure, it's SB 1418, that's SB 1418, has so far advanced solely with Republican votes. Democrats are raising questions about safety, dealing with nuclear waste, and why the state isn't instead promoting renewable forms of energy like solar, wind, and geothermal. But there could be a crack in that partisan divide. As Republicans, they say, we are supposed to be for local control, Representative Walt Blackman told GOP colleagues during a caucus to discuss the pending House floor vote. The snowflake Republican represents a sprawling district which includes parts of Coconino, Gila, Navajo, and Pinal counties. I've been seeing a lot of bills from the so-called Republicans that do the opposite, he said. And Blackman said if the net effect of this bill is to override local decisions, he will vote against it when it reaches the House floor. House Majority Leader Michael Carbone, however, said he has no problem with such an override. We do it all the time, acknowledged the Buckeye Republican. In fact, Carbone was a prime mover behind the 2025 law that allows homeowners to build, quote, accessory dwelling units, unquote, on their own property, regardless of local zoning, and over the objections from cities who said this should be a local issue. An effort to exempt historic neighborhoods from the law recently failed. But he said that for him, the bottom line for all decisions for the state to step in is that the cities and counties are subdivisions of the state. And that, said Carbone, means state legislators sometimes need to preempt local control for what they believe are worthy causes. And then the last two stories on the front page. Biggs is among election deniers and seeking governor seat. Arizona Representative and Republican Andy Biggs challenged President Donald Trump's loss in 2020 election, even though he won re-election on the same ballots. Georgia Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones was one of Trump's 2020 alternate electors in the controversial effort to overturn Trump's election loss in the Peach State that year, that is, Georgia. And U.S. Republican Tom Tiffany of Wisconsin voted against certifying Joe Biden's electoral college victories in Arizona and Pennsylvania following the January 6th, 2021 riots. The Capitol attack after Trump urged his supporters to fight his election loss. Tiffany later said he would have objected to his own state's electoral votes too, if he had the opportunity. And our last story on the front page this morning is Inside El Mencho's Altar, Faith Amid Cartel Violence. As bullets flew during the fateful shootout in which the Mexican drug kingpin known as El Mencho would be fatally wounded, did he seek help in his final moments by murmuring desperate prayers to St. Jude? That's the question. Did he murmur desperate prayers to St. Jude? Among Mexico's most wanted fugitives before being killed in February in a Mexican military raid, Nemesio Oseguera, co-founder and head of the Cartel de Jalisco Nueva Generación, CJNG, had spent his final days in a high-end Jalisco villa featuring a makeshift shrine topped with Catholic saints and a handwritten copy of the Bible's Psalm 91. So that's Inside El Mencho's Altar, Faith Amid Cartel Violence. And then we read about Biggs, Andy Biggs, among election deniers seeking governor's seats. We reviewed the latest information on nuclear reactors and Arizona bill age use in the small reactor area. And then finally, a triple-digit week. Saguaro's against the big sun roaring as a backdrop. And also some Choyas. So there you have it. That's the front page, folks. And if you're just joining us, welcome in. I'm Steve. I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I'm reading the Arizona Daily Star for today, the 9th of June, 2026. And now we're going to go ahead and move over to the Tucson and region section of the Star. And I'm coming into focus right now. The Tucson and Region section of the Star has several interesting pieces this morning to share. First of all, the plan to save the Mount Graham red squirrel is long and costly. It could take a century and cost more than $24.5 million to save the Mount Graham red squirrel, according to a revised recovery plan for the endangered southern Arizona rodent. To get the squirrel off the endangered species list will require improving and expanding its high-elevation forest habitat and establishing a captive breeding program, among other actions. The draft plan just released by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service estimates it will take at least 60 to 100 years to plant, regrow, and manage the proper mix of trees needed to support a viable population in the only place on Earth where the animals are found. Mount Graham red squirrels can respond quickly to changes in food availability and can exploit pulses in food resources, resulting in population-level responses to boomer, or otherwise high-yield, cone crop years, write the multi-agency authors of the plan. Therefore, we estimate time to recovery based on anticipated forest regrowth. The revised recovery plan also sets specific criteria to eventually downlist and then delist the rare subspecies of red squirrel. Downlisting it from endangered to threatened would require a dispersed population of at least 400 squirrels over a 9-year period with habitat conditions that provide sufficient connectivity and protection from high-intensity forest fires. The squirrel could be removed from the federal list altogether with a growing and self-sustaining population of at least 600 over 9 years, and, quote, a mosaic of heterogeneous forest habitat, unquote, that gives the species a 90% chance of survival. So there you have it. That's information on the plan to save the red squirrel. It's going to be long and it's going to be costly. Next local news story. Council could shift economics efforts. The Tucson City Council will consider realigning its major economic development and community programs under a new office. The Office of Community and Economic Impact would allow better coordination between the city's action plans on major policy goals, including climate change, cultural affairs, prosperity, economic development, and equity, City Manager Tom Tomer said in a memo. Quote, we have a shared understanding that climate resilience, economic opportunity, cultural vitality, and equity are not separate policy goals, but interconnected drivers of long-term prosperity and quality of life for all Tucsonans, unquote. The Cultural Affairs Division, Office of Economic Initiatives, Sustainability Efforts, and Office of Equity were already organized under the city manager, but the city's Prosperity Initiative, a partnership with Pima County and several nonprofits, would be moved under the new office if the council approves the plan at Tuesday's meeting. Tomura's current chief of staff, Lane Mandel, would oversee the new office as executive management professional directly under Tamir. The proposed restructuring comes as the city continues to grapple with questions over future economic development alongside recent job projections. Mayor Regina Ramiro called the city's current economic strategy, quote, fragmented, unquote, in a 2025 op-ed following the intense backlash to the Project Blue Data Center. Quote, no one person can explain clearly and easily what our collective vision is as a region. This is our own detriment. This is to our own detriment, unquote, she wrote. Preliminary data suggests Tucson will continue to see slow job growth for the next few years due to a combination of demographic shifts and slow hiring rates combined with federal uncertainty, said Jennifer Pullen, who's the director of the University of Arizona's Economic and Business Research Center. Pullen said, quote, the Tucson region is solely reliant on migration for population growth now, and then we also have a federal policy that's inhibiting migration. That's what Pullen just said. The first 4 months of job data show weak signs, according to an analysis from the Economic and Business Research Center. Preliminary data show the Tucson metropolitan area, which includes Pima County, lost 1,500 jobs compared to April of 2025, or about a 0.4% drop. The EBRC forecasts overall growth for the year to be between 0.1% and 0.2%. Tamir writes the proposed restructuring is also due in part to the mayor's involvement in the Bloomberg Harvard City Leadership Program, an annual leadership cohort that teaches city leaders how to tackle complex urban challenges, according to their website. So that's a little bit on economic planning. The council could shift economic efforts here. And let's see, we have a couple of more stories and then a big picture about Reed Park Zoo. How rural Arizona schools tackle literacy gaps. As Arizona rolls out a statewide plan to boost literacy and curb chronic absenteeism, some rural schools say they've already found what works, specifically leaning on community partnerships and improvisation. The Arizona Literacy Plan 2030 aims to send literacy coaches into rural districts and tackle attendance gaps that widened during the pandemic. But in places like Yavapai County, educators have spent years building their own solutions, from volunteer tutoring to after-school programs, to keep students engaged and reading at grade level despite limited funding and resources. Even as the state steps in with new support, educators say real progress in rural schools may still depend on something harder to scale, specifically local relationships, creativity, and communities filling the gaps. Steve King, the Yavapai County superintendent, said literacy rates and chronic absenteeism rates are linked. Chronic absenteeism is defined as kids missing 18 days of school or more per year, or about 10 days of the school year. He said many students are missing dozens of days per year, putting them further behind. At the start of the 2025-2026 school year, King wrote to President Donald Trump asking him to release federal education funds that were being withheld at the time. The federal funds were to be used to fund 21st Century Community Learning Centers Initiative, which in turn funds after-school programs. So that's a little bit on how rural Arizona schools tackle literacy gaps. And our last story in this section this morning. Phoenix Church Group fights food distribution ban, and it shows a picture here. A Phoenix church says a Phoenix ordinance criminalizes evangelism and makes it impossible to provide food, water, Bibles, and small hygiene products to unhoused people in city parks. And this is the article, a short article here. I'll read a brief summary of it. An Orthodox Christian group sued Phoenix over a new law restricting free food distribution and medical care to people in need at parks, continuing a regional battle over how cities should respond to homelessness in public spaces. So that's most of the local news. Now, the last piece is about Reed Park Zoo's safari nights. They're just beginning here. And it opens with a picture of a boy, Jackson McPherson. He's splashing down in the slip and slide at Reed Park Zoo, cooling off this weekend at summer safari nights. Safari nights at Tucson's Reed Park Zoo runs from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. every Saturday, except July 4th, through August 8th. Each night will feature unique themes, live music, food, and activities. And so if you want to learn more, go to reedparkzoo.org. That's reedparkzoo.org for more information. And here are some other pictures. A flamingo washes down a bit at Reed Park Zoo, which is open at night for summer safari nights. And here we see Meru, the young African elephant. He's enjoying a dip in the pond as temps begin to drop at summer safari nights at Reed Park Zoo. So that's a little bit of the local news this morning from the Tucson and Region section of the Star. And now we go over to the business section of the Arizona Star. For today, the 9th of June, 2026. And there are a few stories this morning. Retailers brace for bigger stress amid the Iran war. And it shows people shopping at Costco in Staten Island in New York on January 16th. It looks a lot like the Tucson Costco. With the Iran war stretching into its fourth month, U.S. retail companies that have so far banked on a resilient consumer could face a tougher road ahead as rising gas prices and economic pain gradually erode the buffer. Results from Dollar Tree, Walmart, Gap, and others over the past few weeks showed that consumers are still spending, but in an increasingly selective way, prioritizing essential upgrades and value-driven purchases while pulling back on discretionary items. The strain on retailers is starting to show more clearly as the current earnings season draws to a close. Core lower-income customers are cutting back on expenses, including food. Discount retailer Dollar General CFO Donnie Lau said during an earnings call Tuesday. Dollar stores are increasingly attracting shoppers earning over $100,000 annually who are trading down. U.S. consumer confidence eased slightly in May as inflation concerns tied to the Middle East conflict and higher fuel costs offset improving labor market sentiment. So far, consumers aren't pulling back significantly, but they are clearly shifting behavior, said Michael Gunther. He's the CFA, Senior Vice President of Research and Marketing Intelligence at Consumer Edge. Going forward, gas prices will be key. If they stay high through the summer and back to school season, they could start putting more pressure on discretionary spending. Retailers typically book about 50 to 60% of their annual revenue in the second half of the year, beginning with the back-to-school shopping in the summer and Thanksgiving and Christmas toward the end of the year. Apparel companies and department stores such as Kohl's and Macy's lean toward the higher end of that range. Uncertainty, however, is rising, and as the long-term effect of the Iran war continues, The effect on the economy remains unknown, Telsey Advisory Group analysts said in a note. Expectations around consumer spending could moderate the longer the national average gas price remains above $4 per gallon, the note added. Analysts and experts have warned that even if the war were to end soon, considering the damage already done to energy infrastructure and global supply chains, prices will remain high well into the second half of the year. Despite strong first quarter results, the earnings growth rate for the consumer discretionary sector for the S&P 500 companies was projected at about 5.2% for the second quarter of 2026 versus the 40.4% projection in the previous quarter, according to data compiled by LSEG. Spending growth is positive, but cooling. People also are looking for cheap thrills, while necessities have gotten more expensive. Restaurants, beauty products, and personal care seems to be doing all right, said Brian Jacobson, chief economic strategist of Annex Wealth Management. The divide is particularly evident in apparel. It says here, Gap and American Eagle have struggled with demand from budget-strained consumers, as well as merchandising missteps in key categories, including women's wear, disappointing investors. By contrast, shares in Abercrombie and Fitch, Bath and Body Works, and Victoria's Secret jumped after strong results after they capitalized on fresh styles and full-price sales while benefiting from demand from affordable luxuries. So, membership clubs such as Costco and Walmart's Sam's Club are drawing in more shoppers to fuel their pumps and stores with cheaper gas and everyday essentials. There's certainly nothing to panic about right now. But when you dig into the details, you can see that the pressure is a little bit uneven, and so it's something that we're keeping our eye on, Walmart's finance chief officer John Rainey said last month. Let's look at our next story in the business section. U.S. Airlines fuel costs soared in April to $6.5 billion. Fuel costs for U.S. airlines jumped 78% in April to nearly $6.5 billion compared with the year before, as the Middle East conflict drives up jet fuel prices, the U.S. Transportation Department said Monday. Airlines' fuel costs were up 26% over March, and carriers used 2.6% less fuel in April over March, USDOT said in a monthly report. The cost per gallon of fuel in April was $4.11, up from $1.81 over April 2025, USDOT added, a trend that has already had an impact on the sector. Spirit Airlines, an ultra-low-cost U.S. carrier, ceased operations in May, saying rising fuel prices left it no choice. Delta Airlines, United Airlines, American Airlines, and Southwest Airlines account for about 80% of U.S. domestic flights. The International Air Transport Association, which represents more than 370 airlines, accounted for about 85% of global air traffic, said in its annual report Sunday that it expects the industry to post a combined net profit of $23 billion in 2026, well below a previous projection of about $41 billion and down from $45 billion in 2025. Average fares for flights with U.S. origin have risen this year by as much as 31% for domestic trips and 22% for international ones when compared to the same weeks in 2025, according to Kayak research data. The Middle East conflict, triggered by U.S. and Israeli airstrikes on Iran, has also forced airlines to reroute flights around closed or restricted airspace, increasing fuel burn and straining already tight capacity. Oil prices have surged on fears of supply disruption, pushing jet fuel prices sharply higher and widening refinery margins, leaving airlines facing a steep jump in their largest cost. There you have information on jet fuel. Inflation outlook holds steady. That's the next article. The U.S. public's inflation outlook was little changed in May, despite the strong upward pressure on prices resulting from the war in the Middle East, a survey released by the New York Federal Reserve showed on Monday. Inflation a year from now was expected to be 3.5% versus 3.6% in April, while respondents saw inflation 3 years and 5 years from now at 3.1% and 3.0% respectively. While the projected path of price pressures was little changed in May, the regional Fed Bank's survey found that uncertainty over future inflation rose over near-term measures amid rising anxiety about the current and future state of personal finances. The New York Fed survey showed that the year ahead expected rise in gasoline prices stood at 5% in May, down slightly from April. The year ahead expected rate of home price growth jumped to 3.5% from 3% in April, marking the biggest reading since July 2022. So that's a little bit, folks, on the inflation outlook. It appears to be holding steady. And then our last story in the business section, McDonald's seeks new ways to lure diners. And McDonald's Corporation is betting on everything from fancier chicken to new playgrounds as a part of a campaign to make fast food feel less like fast food. New menu items, including hand-breaded wings and fillets, are in testing as part of a wide-ranging wager on higher quality food. This, along with more engaging social media campaigns and upgrades to restaurants, should help McDonald's cement itself as more diners' first choice, not just for a quick meal on the go, but also for family outings and other occasions. McDonald's will still focus on value and speed, but customers are, quote, really demanding more for their money, unquote, Chief Executive Officer Chris Kempczinski said. They've raised their expectations as competitors upgrade their menus and offer new options in fast-growing categories such as chicken, beef, and beverages. This is raising the bar for McDonald's, especially as inflation quickens and consumer sentiment weakens. The inflation issues that are facing McDonald's and other food chains are real. The geopolitical issues that are facing us are real, Kempczinski said. We've got to find ways to make our restaurants work better and work more efficiently. So that's a little bit on McDonald's seeking new ways to lure diners. We talked about inflation, and that outlook looks steady. We talked about U.S. airlines fuel costs soaring in April to $6.5 billion. And then finally, retailers are bracing for bigger stress amid the Iran war. Now we go to the Nation and World section of the Star, and I'm going to cruise on down to digital page 28. Coming into focus now on Nation and World. And so I'm going to be reading the main articles, and then also the digest and briefs. So the U.S. economy is in the crosshairs here. Public view of inflation remains unchanged as war keeps prices high. And we've already read a few background or articles on that. Opinion stays consistent. U.S. public inflation outlook was little changed in May despite the strong upward pressure on prices resulting from the war in the Middle East, a survey released by the New York Federal Reserve showed Monday. So this is really another piece of that same story that we read in the Nation and in the business section, rather, of the Star. The survey revealed mixed reviews and views on the job market, with reduced worries about future rises in unemployment and growing concern about the prospect of involuntary job losses. Respondents also grew less confident about finding work in May in the event of becoming unemployed. The survey also found more concern among respondents in May about their current and future financial situations, with most of the people reporting worse current situations at the highest reading since January 2023. Now we go on to Spain, and the main article in the Nation and World section this morning opens with a picture of Pope Leo XIV, and he's blessing a child Monday during a meeting with the diocesan community at the Santiago Bernabeu Stadium in Madrid. And the article is called Pope Meets with Some Survivors. Groups say Pontiff not doing enough to address sexual abuse. Pope Leo met with six survivors of sexual abuse by Catholic clergy in Spain on Monday, the Vatican said, as groups of survivors who were not invited criticized the event as a mere photo opportunity. The Vatican provided few details of the meeting, which lasted about an hour, but it said Leo listened to proposals to make church safeguarding more effective and promised to make it a safe space for all. Leo, on a week-long visit to Spain, earlier made his first direct reference to scandals that shook the Spanish church's credibility, telling bishops they must listen to survivors and offer them reparations. A 2023 report by Spain's Human Rights Ombudsman estimated that Spanish clergy abused hundreds of thousands of victims over decades, echoing scandals that shook the church's moral authority around the world and cost hundreds of millions of dollars in settlements. Juan Cuatrecasas, that's Juan Cuatrecasas, president of the group Stolen Childhood, said the survivors' meeting with the Pope fell short by failing to include representatives of all church victims. They are being used by the church, by the bishops' conference, to clean up the image of the Spanish church, he told reporters. Survivors groups called for stricter accountability and a global zero-tolerance policy for clergy accused of misconduct. Stolen Childhood and other Spanish groups demanded measures including fair compensation and lifelong psychological care for victims, as well as support for education and employment. Last week, Madrid Cardinal Jose Cobo said it was not feasible for the Pope to meet multiple groups of survivors during the packed itinerary. Spanish activist Miguel Hurtado was dismayed that the Pope was not due to meet the survivors of abuse at the mountainside Montserrat Abbey outside Barcelona, where Hurtado said he was abused as a teenager. Leo will visit Montserrat, which was included in the 2023 Ombudsman report, on Wednesday, and have lunch with its Benedictine monks. At the very least, remember the victims, Hurtado told reporters. Commit publicly to cleaning the church of abusers and those who cover them up. Next on Nation and World, Trump's $100,000 visa fee is illegal, judge rules. Sorokin says, this is Judge Sorokin, he says the H-1B price is a tax Congress did not authorize. A federal judge Monday struck down a $100,000 fee President Donald Trump imposed on new H-1B visas for highly skilled foreign workers, concluding that it constituted an unlawful tax Congress didn't authorize. U.S. District Judge Leo Sorokin in Boston issued the ruling in a lawsuit filed by 20 Democratic state attorneys general challenging a fee Trump announced in September that dramatically raised the cost of obtaining H-1B visas. Next, in Nation and World, USDA confirms three more screwworm cases. Regulators are left, they've left after White House pushed for staff resignations. The U.S. Department of Agriculture confirmed three additional cases of New World screwworm Monday, including two in Texas, according to the agency's animal health arm. The Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service said two Texas cases affected a calf in LaSalle County and a goat in Gillespie County. New World screwworm is a serious pest that can infest any warm-blooded animal, including livestock, pets, wildlife, and in rare cases, people. The larvae burrow into the living tissue of animals, causing severe wounds, animal suffering, and significant economic losses. The USDA confirmed the second case of flesh-eating screwworm parasite Friday in Texas, just miles from where the first U.S. detection in decades was reported last week. So, it's a little bit on the USDA confirming three more screwworm cases. Trump's $100,000 visa fee is illegal, says a judge. We talked about the main story. The Pope meets with some survivors of sexual abuse, and then we opened with opinion says that the economy and inflation remains unchanged. Now, the digest and in brief. Italian prosecutors investigate Ben-Gvir. Italian prosecutors put Israel's far-right national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, under investigation over the treatment of activists who were part of the Gaza flotilla last month, a judicial source said Monday. In Albania, Albania will move ahead with a luxury resort planned by Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, on a remote stretch of Balkan coast, despite persistent protests over its environmental impact, Prime Minister Edi Rama told Reuters on Monday. And now, in brief, a Miami federal judge ordered Donald Trump's lawyers Monday to explain why they should not be penalized for missing a Friday deadline to respond to the BBC's motion to dismiss the U.S. president's $10 billion defamation lawsuit over a misleadingly edited clip of a speech. A representative for Trump's lawyers did not immediately respond for comment. Here's Todd Blanche in the news. President Donald Trump submitted Todd Blanche's nomination to the U.S. Senate to serve as Attorney General, the White House said Monday. Blanche, 51, took over leadership of the Justice Department after Trump fired Pam Bondi in April. And now in North Korea, China will not swerve from its commitment to safeguarding common interests with North Korea or waver in its support for Kim Jong-un, President Xi Jinping told the North's leader Monday during a rare Pyongyang summit. Next, vaccine funds. The global vaccine group Gavi, G-A-V-I, Gavi, said Monday it hopes to use $600 million in soon-to-be-restored U.S. funding to boost malaria and other vaccination efforts, as it also meets U.S. conditions for phasing out the preservative thimerosal in other vaccines in its portfolio. And now to Ebola. The Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, confirmed Monday that Ebola deaths climbed and that the presence of armed groups was continuing to hinder the response in the hardest hit province. The outbreak of Bundibugyo strain of Ebola was announced May 15th. The total number of confirmed cases is 550. The total number of deaths, 101. And then finally, from Malta, at least 11 people died after a migrant boat capsized off Malta, charity group Sea Watch said on Monday, while about 50 more were rescued at sea by a fishing vessel in the area. The Italian Coast Guard said the vessel departed from Libya carrying about 60 people. So that's the nation and world this morning. And now, if you are University of Arizona fans, it's time to bear down. And we're going to cruise up to page 17, where I find the sports section this morning. Here we go, coming into focus. Sports says that Arizona golf is at its finest. And I'll read that in just a moment. I'm going to read about Arizona baseball first. Retiree payments receive praise. Well, let's see. Let's go ahead and go down to Soroka's resurgence continues. Those are the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's the pitcher. It shows Arizona Diamondbacks right-hander Mitch Soroka. He wears number 34. He's pitching against the Washington Nationals at Chase Field in Phoenix. Michael Soroka's last winning season was 2019, when he went 13-4 for Atlanta and was a National League All-Star. 7 years later, he's headed toward more wins than losses. He's 8-3 after holding the Nationals to a run on 3 hits over 7 innings on Sunday at Chase Field. Gabriel Moreno and Corbin Carroll homered, and the Diamondbacks took a 5-1 win. How about that? Fantastic. Okay, now, we open with Arizona golf at its finest. It's the Southern Arizona Golf Guide, and it features Ventana Canyon Golf and Racquet Club. It's widely considered as one of the top golf courses in Tucson. Regardless of location in Arizona, the state is a golf haven, the article reads. In Southern Arizona, there is a plethora of golf courses worth playing. Yes, even in peak summer. Hey, cheaper rates. We've created a guide with 10 courses Southern Arizona golfers should play as soon as possible. Here's the catch. No country clubs or courses that require memberships to play, which excludes sumptuous tracks like Tucson Country Club, the home of the course of the Arizona Wildcats, along with La Paloma Country Club, Skyline Country Club, the Golf Gallery, the Gallery Golf Club, and Stone Canyon Golf Club. Oh, and no putt-putt golf, although we don't discourage anyone from working on their short game at golf and stuff, a long-standing Tucson staple. Over the last week or so, we've featured 10 courses that should be on your golf to-do list in Southern Arizona. We have reached the finishing line after featuring Quarry Pines, the Golf Club at Dove Mountain, Casino del Sol's Cewelo Golf Club, the club at Star Pass, Randolph Golf Complex, Arizona National Golf Club, El Conquistador, Omni Tucson National, and Tubac Golf Resort. Last up to the tee box is Ventana Canyon. Ventana Canyon, located at 6200 North Clubhouse Lane, 36 holes, 2 18-hole courses, both mountain and canyon, and 13,734 yards. So there you have it. They feature this great golf course, Ventana Canyon, and it makes a case for the best golf course in Tucson, they say. Okay, and then the last article in sports this morning involves the WNBA, the Women's National Basketball Association. Retiree payments receive praise. Former Phoenix Mercury star Bridget Pettis walked away from working in the WNBA to focus on her South Phoenix farm during the pandemic of 2020. 6 years later, the Mercury Ring of Honor inductee is grateful for the league's new one-time veteran recognition payments for retired players, which are due at the end of 2026. "I thought it was a blessing," Pettis told the Arizona Republic. "It's definitely going to help." Pettis spent 17 years in the WNBA as a player and coach when salaries were minimal. She was working on the farm when several of her associates sent her text messages about the league's landmark collective bargaining agreement finalized in March, which included the retiree payment plan. On May 29th, the Front Office Sports reported the new CBA will send 280 retired players more than $14 million in lump sum remittances. So that's great news. Great news for WNBA retiree. And those are the payments they'll receive. We talked about Arizona golf at its finest. And we talked a little bit about Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher, right-hander, Michael Soroka. So now, we're going to go ahead and move on to Tucson Lifestyles. This is going to end our broadcast this morning. And if you've been with us for a while, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. I'm going to be reading the Lifestyles section of the Arizona Daily Star. Here it comes up now. And if today is your birthday, happy birthday. And it's the following information on your birthday. You're curious and versatile, yet tenacious. You have high personal standards and remain true to your beliefs. This is a year of teaching and learning. Renew your spiritual or religious beliefs. So there you are. Happy birthday to you. If this 9th of June, 2026, is your birthday today. Now, on to hints from Heloise. Very interesting. "I, too, have trouble," does the writer say to Heloise, "with the very tiny print on labels. I found a trick that is a lifesaver for this problem. I simply use my phone to take a picture of the label, and then I can enlarge it as big as I want. This is very helpful in stores to read and compare labels while shopping." And then that hint to Heloise is from Debbie in East Amherst, New York. And Heloise says, "Debbie, I use a magnifying glass to read labels with small print, and it's worked out for me. In fact, I have magnifying glasses all over my house and office." That's what Heloise said. "But I like this idea of using your phone to take a picture and then enlarging it on your phone. Here's one, a fading part of life. I loved your response about reading the news from actual newspaper. Amen. A hard print newspaper is for me. I hope that the hard print copy is never discontinued, but maybe when my generation is gone, the printed newspaper will be too. I hopefully will not be gone for another few decades. Being on a computer all day long is just not for me. I read the Orange County Register daily and your columns always." And this is from Claudia in Laguna Beach, California. And Heloise says, "Claudia, my dad always said that you knew you were growing old when the newspaper came and you opened the paper to find the obituaries before you read the sports pages." And that's a hint from Heloise. And now we continue. And I'm, of course, reading the digital version of the Star today, Don't have a paper version here at home. Don't Light Up is the next hint from Heloise. I work as a surgical nurse, and today the doctor removed a cancerous lung from a person who was sick due to smoking and two to three packs a day. The person was only 32 years old and had been smoking since he was 13. If there's one thing I could say to young people today, it would be don't smoke and don't vape. You get one set of lungs. Here's one. Don't try before you buy. Dear Heloise, regarding customers who try a grape before they buy it, the food that is for sale isn't a free buffet for people. Yes, it's the only grape. It's only one grape. But what if every customer tried one grape? How would that be okay? And Heloise says to Steve, who writes that, Steve, I have to agree with you that a healthy piece of fruit shouldn't be sampled in the store. Who knows who was handling the grape or cherry? Bacteria from several people are usually on these pieces of fruit. So, how about today in history? Well, in 1534, French explorer Jacques Cartier became the first European to sail into the St. Lawrence River. In 1856, on this day, nearly 500 Latter-day Saints were in the first handcart brigade as they began walking west to be with a migration leader, Brigham Young. In 1902, future U.S. President Woodrow Wilson became president at Princeton University. In 1978, on this day today, Latter-day Saints leadership ended their religious prohibition of black men serving in the church as priests. On this day, in 1989, U.S. Representative John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, who had the sixth longest tenure in history, first proposed a bill seeking a commission to study slavery reparations for African Americans. And then on this day in 1972, Bruce Springsteen signed a contract with Columbia Records for his debut album, Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey. Finally, on this day, 2017, singer-songwriter Glen Campbell's first album, Adios, was released after his last tour and prior diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. Campbell died about 2 months after the release. There you have it, folks. That's the broadcast for today. I'm Steve. Thank you for the privilege of your time. I wish you the best of goodbyes.